Okay. So good morning.
Good morning.
Good. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I think I hear Audra?
Yes.
Okay. So
I have muted it.
Okay. Bridget, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And we have Kelly on today?
Yes.
Okay. Well, look, I'm hoping that you all are continuing to have, a great week, and that the program is continuing to do you justice and do good. So, let's maybe start today's call off with, first of all, things that are on your mind, and maybe give me an update on your progress for implementation and execution. So let's start with that.
Okay, who's going first?
Why me, Kelly?
I'm on my speaker. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. I can.
Okay. So repeat again what you want me to focus on. I just want to make sure I'm hitting on the points you want me to address. Not
sure. Well, like I say, I like to start the calls with your agenda first and the things that are on your mind. And you can give me an update on your progress and how your implementation and execution is going with the program.
Okay. Things that are on my mind may not be necessarily what's on everybody else's mind, but I think overall, everybody's doing exactly what they need to be doing. We're getting some really positive feedback. I can talk about that in more detail if you want. Just much discussion focused around long-term care, and for whatever reason, that seems to be resonating with the client base pretty strongly. I mean, just at this point in the month, at least 11 case opportunities for new business on long-term care. So these aren't just like, hey, I've got a long-term care policy, take a look at it. It's literally discussions where people are like, yes, I'm ready to have that more in-depth discussion about it. Yes, it's been on my mind. And yeah, I'm curious about exploring my options there. And so we were pretty surprised by, I think, the amount of positive feedback. I didn't really have a number in my head. I just kind of was like, hey, I'm going to tell the story. And I guess maybe part of it, too, is that we're dealing with that personally and with two parents right now. And so my enthusiasm level, my conviction level when I talk about these things is probably pretty high.
Oh,
yeah.
And maybe part of it, too. I don't know. But the need is there, and certainly there's gaps to fill to help them with that. And so that's been exciting. I think I've been slower than normal. I'm not going to get into a self-analysis or anything like that, but I would say one of the weak areas I've got right now is I don't think that I've been able to turn our marketing message into a simpler message. Both virtually and whether that's through something like LinkedIn or in hard copy format. And so that's affected our ability. Again, it's on me. I'm no one else. It's affected our ability to turn the Meaning Me folders into what I think could be pretty powerful marketing opportunity. But we got old marketing material. It's too long. Nobody's going to read it. It's kind of antiquated. It's not really a succinct, clear, concise message like we'd want to convey to a client or to a prospect. And but we're working on that. And part of it has to do, in part, with personnel changes that have occurred at the corporate level. Minneapolis has been pretty recent. So we're kind of wading through that. I'm expecting to get some headway on that towards the latter part of next week. Other than that, I mean, as far as the team members and doing their part, Audrey's been doing financial plans. We had a meeting just Friday. It was a really nice meeting with a long-term client. We think that we have all their assets. We don't. They've got another 300 or 400 sitting out there in cash that they're looking for something to do with. And I think in last month's call, we mentioned one. We onboarded them this month, so they moved over about an additional $1.1 million with us, roughly doubling the amount of assets they had on board with us. So we are getting some positive traction. The other area that I'm getting, I guess, frustrated with, I guess, is a good way to put it. And again, it's back on me. I'm having trouble getting the emails that I send out to them in the time frame that I'd like to, because I think I crowded my schedule too much. And I'm the kind of guy that likes to work in like 2-hour chunks and then take a break for 20 minutes and work in 2-hour chunks, maybe hour and a half, 2 hours, and really focus on one thing at a time. It's probably the perfectionist in me coming out, which can be a good thing, can be a really bad thing too.
Sometimes, are these the executive summary email? Are these the executive summary email?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And I have to admit, I'm not the most technically adroit guy on the planet for sure. That's entering into it some too, but not to the point to where it's egregious or I'm getting complaints about it, but just I feel like it's a sticking point and feeling like it's, you know, not so laborious. But but that's kind of where I am, and then I'll be quiet and let the others talk.
Okay.
But overall, I'm pretty happy. I mean, I'm not. I don't want to leave you on a sour note. I guess I kind of am there. But overall, I feel like I feel very positive about the direction we're going in, and I know whatever puck we're skating to is a good one. So.
Good. I'll come back to you with some feedback after I hear from everybody else. So I've got some things that I think can help. Okay. Audra, Bridget?
Go ahead. No, I would just say that's pretty much what I would say is what Kelly said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Alright. Things like the financial planning component, is really giving a lift, and so kudos to you on that. Like I say, I'll come back to some of the things that Kelly brought up and maybe give you some of my thoughts on that. Bridget, tell me, as VP of Operations and Brand, how are things going?
I think things are going good.
Okay.
I mean, Kelly summed it up.
Okay.
Audra did a really good job picking the topics, and that helped, really helpful, because I can see what's going to happen in the next couple months.
Okay.
Kelly's doing a really good job, too. He is sending out the summary, so he doesn't give himself any credit, but the summaries look really good, too. And they're super detailed, which I can see why he's saying it. Laborious, or however you say that, because he tells them a lot.
Okay.
And then on the scheduling thing, I would say I agree with Kelly. He schedules a lot in one day, so he like overworks himself, and he probably needs to sleep more.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. That's a good suggestion. All right. So, Bridget, question.
We had one thing I wanted to throw in, and this is something that happened last week. We were at an IMCA conference, which is something else now. I forget what they call it. It's like the Wealth Institute, Investment and Wealth Institute. But it's the old IMCA, you know, that sponsors SEMA and a couple of other designations.
Yes.
And so I had the SEMA designation for 9 years. I never went to the annual conference. I always found an excuse not to. Usually it was, I'm busy, you know, and I didn't want to go away from home or whatever. But we went last week in Nashville, and it was pretty interesting. We learned a lot about foundations and charitable aspects of wealth planning that, quite frankly, are kind of like scaredy cat zones for me right now. Okay?
Okay.
I'll just be very upfront about that. And it's not because I don't think we can learn it. It's just we haven't learned it yet.
Right.
We also made a tremendous amount of headway in two other areas. We were able to meet with an advisor panel that works exclusively with foundations that range in size, the smaller foundations, from about 2 million in assets up to about 50 million in assets. And I found, of all places, my former firm, go figure, but a guy that's willing to be available as a resource. Obviously, we go to you first, Curtis, because I know you got a lot of expertise there and you've been helping Auger with some projects there. But as I listened to it, I was sitting there and I was sort of having these moments where I was like, look, if you can go and you can open 35 ERISA accounts, you can go open 35 foundations. It might take 4 or 5 years, but you can go open them. I mean, it's not that much different in terms of what type of work you're doing. It's nuanced and it's different and it's got a whole other language and UMIFRA and all this other stuff. But I think that's an area we want to explore and pursue. I was able to get access to some help through GuideStar and get a richer database than what we've been able to get in the past. I think that could be helpful. And then on the current clients, I met with a guy. He emailed me today. We're supposed to have a conference call. He's in New York. He got sick, and he's going to call me next Monday. But he's with a company that's owned by Financial Times. They have an information database similar to what we have internally with, what's it called, Audra? I can't even think of the name of it.
The internal database?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
What is it? I'm trying to think. I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, it's our internal database where we draw our monthly topics to talk to clients about.
Right.
Fourfield, thank you. And they don't even call it Fourfield anymore. It's a company that you need to step out. We're talking over each other. Go in the other room or something. Okay?
Right.
Please, now.
In the call together,
okay? Well, you can do that too, one or the other. But, okay, sorry about that. I was getting some bad interference.
Okay.
But anyway, so bottom line was he was like, look, RBC bought Fourfield about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer. And I get the sense that the topics in there are not updated that often. Like it's this database is kind of sitting out there, but it's not necessarily getting the most fresh data in it. And he was willing, at no cost, to basically have a dialogue with us. I started telling him about Supernova and telling them about the monthly topics and stuff. And I said, you know, we want to be able to send something to a client on most of these calls where we follow up with them and we just say, hey, thanks for the call. Had a great call. You know, here's kind of an overview of long-term care or whatever the heck it is we're talking about. And he's willing to basically customize different pieces to whatever topic we need and essentially provide a more robust database and do it at no cost.
Wow.
Apparently, they're like Google. They make their money off of sponsorships and ads and, you know, selling the data, you know, selling people information or whatever. So anyway, so we're exploring that with him to see where that might take us as well. And that's, you know, I don't want to dominate the call, but that's, I think there were some good things that came out of that conference.
Okay, good. So I think what I'm hearing, I'll start from where you left off and then we'll work our way back up. But what I see here, and these are the things that we have discussed previously, and that is to really clearly define niche markets, either the ones that you already have or the ones that you want to explore. So if the area of nonprofits and philanthropic services is a niche market that you want to develop, then, you know, you're going to start getting up to speed. So the first thing is to really learn and understand how they operate. And one of the easiest things for me to transition is having served on a number of these nonprofit boards. Like I was on a hospital board. I was on a community college foundation board. I was on a symphony board, a community center board, the Y. I was on that board, which is in the Bay Area. And so what happens is when you are serving on a board, you start to understand how the decisions are made, from, you know, not so complex to very large foundations with lots of endowment money, so on and so forth, with investment policy statements and how they can sometimes get outdated, and kind of the institutional capabilities that you need to have with some of the larger ones. So, and then there are a number of websites to, what was the Nonprofit Alliance, I think, was one that I gave you that has a wealth of information about how these nonprofits operate. In addition to that, years ago I read a book by a woman by the name of, I think it was Joan Flanagan, and it was all about nonprofits. I can't really recall the name of the book, but that really got me up to speed very, very quickly. And, you know, so I've been involved in things like the strategic planning, you know, committee, the investment management committee, all of these things. And what that did is it contributed to my level of understanding. And so I went to, I was promoted to go to an office and kind of turn it around, and nobody was doing that business. And so I got a couple of, three really bright guys, and I asked them, I said, why don't we create a niche in this area? I'll work with you. I'll go on some of the appointments with you. And they turned it into a pretty substantial practice at this point. And I think they're all in, like, Barron's and that sort of thing. So it's a great niche. So what you have to do is very clearly understand, it's almost like, I'm going to use myself as an example. Let's say that I want to be very knowledgeable of everything that financial advisors go through. And so I've got to talk to them. So I get informal feedback and knowledge that way. I read investment news. I read RIA Biz. These are all online publications. RIA Business, Advisor Hub, Advisor Perspectives. So what I'm saying is on and on and on. There's probably, you know, 8 or 9 publications that I glance over, you know, on a weekly basis to maintain, you know, my competency in those areas. And so you probably do that, Shelley, in the pension area to keep yourself up to speed with changes that are going on, you know, in the industry. So when you're creating this niche, just go ahead and get a folder or create a file folder on your computer and just start shooting that information in so that you can go back and make reference so you can be conversant on the issues that these organizations face. So it's not just about, you know, can you manage the money? Of course you can. But can you go in and have a good understanding of the issues that they deal with? You know, some organizations have issues with identifying board members. Some have issues of how the investment policy statement is operating and whether or not the advisor that's working with them is sticking to it. You know, some have internal HR issues. I mean, the gamut of things that they deal with. And so when you come in and you're a little knowledgeable about that area, that really helps. So I would encourage you to really look at that as a potential niche market, but you're going to have to get yourself up to speed so that they see you as the, you know, not just the person that can do the money management, but really as an advisor of choice. So that would be my suggestion and recommendation.
Okay.
Any questions on that?
No, I don't think so. I know we've ordered some books and we're doing some reading. I haven't really started reading on it. We've gotten a pretty interesting book. I don't know if it was Joan Flanagan's or not. I don't remember the author, but it was more of a book that was designed to kind of look at the nuts and bolts. It didn't get specific to each industry, and I suspect that you get more of that data through.
I think the foundations in terms of how they manage their resources, you know, you're going to find out that they're going to have to have some basic things. You know, do they have a competent investment committee? Do they have an investment policy statement? You know, what's the spend rate that they have to have to contribute to their operating expenses? You're going to learn that. You're going to be a quick study on that type of stuff. So when you go in and say, okay, so you got X amount of dollars, what's your spend rate? You know, and if they say something like, well, our spend rate is 10%, and you do a quick present value, future value, and say you're going to have to raise X millions of dollars a year to maintain that spend rate, or you're going to have to increase your returns, which means you got to change your investment policy statement and take more risk, and you're unwilling to do that. Or the third thing is you're going to have to reduce your spend rate, and you're going to have to cut back and have the discipline to do that. What is the best choice that your board needs to make? So now, you know, you've gone in and you've advised them. And now they've got to, you know, make a decision. And that's the value that you add when you're working with these nonprofits as their advisors.
Yeah, that's actually the kind of work that I've been doing right now in the Investment Finance Committee for a local school foundation.
Okay.
We have an endowment of $7 million.
Right.
The book that Kelly and I bought is by Linda Moore Schlopper.
Okay.
Building right from the start.
Okay.
So focusing specifically just on the endowment building and endowment management.
Okay. So that's very, very specific. The book I read got into soup to nuts. How to form a 501c3, all the way to bylaws, you know, and identifying the committee. It was a soup to nuts book on how to really create the infrastructure. So I found that to be helpful. But
what we found, because I sat on this school foundation now, this is going to be in my fifth year,
mounted on another board here locally that I'm on, that sit up on the steering committee there.
Cancer research.
No, it's not cancer research. It's biomedical research.
Well, yeah, it's biomedical research, but a lot of it's cancer related, isn't it?
No, it's infectious disease related. Okay. It's really interesting. Here in San Antonio, we have one of the few primate labs in the world, and it actually, you know, subjectively, you could say it's the best primate lab. But they're working on being the leaders in infectious disease, inflammation, and aging. Against that background, they've hired a new CEO, and it's very interesting work. It really is.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, between the two, in my years, I have seen, we've gone through so many different challenges. We've hired new directors, you know, changed strategic plans, changed, you know, gone through exactly what you're talking about in the investment committee, gone through slumps of fundraising, gone through surpluses of fundraising, gone through focus groups, changed executive directors, you know, managed personnel issues under the executive director.
It runs the gamut.
And so I feel like, you know, that is an area that has not necessarily been one of our target markets, but through my experience, it could be a very legitimate target market for us. Because I will say very sincerely, it is my passion.
Okay.
And also, you know, I'm still too passionate about anything other than my family and friends, and I don't get real passionate about this business line or that business line. Otter does. She's real passionate about retirement plans. Honestly, I could take them or leave them. I know a lot about them, but I could take them or leave them. I'm just kind of like, well, I'll go whichever way.
Well, if you can go with your passion and you can have enjoyment of your work, it's all the better, you know.
But, yeah, I am. I mean, but I've always been that way. I mean, it didn't matter what business it was whether it was in this or anything else. I actually had people that I work around that were like, well, you can't ever really tell what he's passionate about, but we know he's passionate about making money. And I guess that's how it comes. I hope clients don't feel that way, because that can be really cheesy and gross. But but I'm not married to any of this stuff. It's kind of my point. In other words, I'm not like digging a, you know, putting a stake in the ground and saying we have to do retirement. One of the guys that was there at the forum last week, he had a combination of endowment foundation, defined benefit plan, and ERISA-based 401k plan, which I thought was fascinating, because I was like, well, hell, that's kind of if you wanted an acquisition right now. I don't want to get out of it. I think we've got a strong suit there. There's organizations that need help in both areas, or maybe they want to help you with one, and then you get into the other. So I don't see it as, like, competing ends as much as it's just, if we've got people that have this experience, and we don't leverage, like, Audrey's experience and knowledge and these capabilities and things, well, then we're kind of the fools that never got in the, in the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is you have to start to think about building some structure around it, Audra. So is there the competent, very knowledgeable attorney that is involved in the formation of these nonprofits and endowments and helping on the legal side? Is there a CPA? Oh, you do know one?
I know of an attorney that's their area.
Who is it?
Okay. So you gotta get that person on the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get one of those. You get a CPA that's extremely knowledgeable about, you know, filing, you know, Form 990s and,
the one that our foundation uses.
Okay.
Find out. But it's basically, we have a bookkeeper and we have an audit.
Okay.
the bookkeeper that does all of our bookkeeping.
Okay. But who does the filing of the tax return and the 990? Okay. Okay. So that could all be part of your mastermind group in that particular niche market. So that's what I'm suggesting that you have is these folks that are enthusiastically endorsed, that understand that business, and you add your complementary strengths, skills, and capabilities to the relationship. And next thing you know, you're working with, you know, five, six, half a dozen of these nonprofits or foundations. So that's a great thing. That's a niche. So now you're going to outline your development of that particular niche market. And so when you think about the strategy, it's like everything. It's what's the value we're providing to this market? Do we have centers of influence in that market? Are we knowledgeable in terms of that market, philanthropic services? Are we reading the journals? Are we staying up to speed so that we can, you know, some of these boards, you know, they meet maybe once a month or on a quarterly basis, and information changes. You know, you may want to, you know, be the leader in creating telephonic boards, bringing in a guest speaker on a conference call and doing a webinar, you know, and just providing value. So I've given you, I don't want to overwhelm you with ideas, but those are just a few of the things that you're, you know, capable of doing when you think about it in terms of Supernova and your go-to market strategy. Okay? And so you can always come back to me with any additional ideas and thoughts. If somebody's willing to provide you a database at no cost, that's great. A former colleague of mine at Merrill started a firm called Discovery Database. His name is Bob Herman. Discovery, I think, sold it, but he's still there. They probably could identify every nonprofit endowment in your market service area, but they charge for it. And if you can get it, you know, at no cost, I would go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I think the source we're on right now for that is actually a company called GuideStar.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
We charge that data too, but you know, we actually have been playing contact about getting specific information from. I don't mind taking a look at Discover database too, just to see how they compare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What we had transitioned with this. We thought we like the idea of the mastermind group, and I think that makes sense. I think we can run track on the two organizations that Audrey's active in. There's a board that I used to be on several years ago. It was about 6 years ago now, and I've served on it for 3 years, and I'm still pretty at least involved in some capacity with them.
Okay.
But it's the Alzheimer's Association, and we were the first nationwide to actually disband our local chapter and have it report. We didn't shut it down. We just had the infrastructure rolled up to their national office in Chicago. And actually, Audrey and I were working with a client last week on some issues around providing some.
I'm sorry about that.
Where I was going with that was just that. I think it would be interesting. I can go to them because I know CED and everybody there. I can, you know, between Audrey's two groups that she's on, that group, it would be interesting to sort of see who's doing your accounting work, who's doing your audit, your 990, who's your attorney, and to see if the same names keep popping up and go out and yeah. with them.
That's the idea.
Yeah. And we've got a really good CPA relationship in the whole places about 2 hours south of here, a firm that's the 16th largest CPA firm in the country. There's a partner in charge in that office. Audrey was mentioning his name a minute ago, kind of under her breath when you were talking earlier, Curtis. And he is such an advocate right now that he will literally look at different lists for us and run okay. cross-references with his client database, not only in okay. Corpus Christi, but in all of the cities throughout the United States. And he's okay. willing to introduce us into other partners where they're doing audit work, say on a defined benefit plan or something like that. And okay. we've worked with these 15 or 16 years in the qualified plan space. So okay. I think we need to build out that network and have a systematic way of going back to them so that we engage with them on a regular basis. That's okay. really what we're missing right now is that systematic monthly or even every 6 weeks sort of engagement process. I had lunch with him last month and he's agreed to have us speak at their annual CPE conference where all the okay. partnership up here and so we're getting some traction but we're not systematized in the way that I'd like to see it be systematized.
Okay. Okay, well, I love that as one of your developing niche markets that could turn out to be, really, really good. So we'll have ongoing conversations about that as it comes up, but just kind of try to think about your supernova model and how you overlay some of the concepts and what you're trying to accomplish. All right. I want to go back to, I took some notes on some of the other areas that you talked about. First of all, long-term care. I can't imagine that there's anybody that's a part of the baby boom generation that can't relate to long-term care based on elderly parents. I can't conceive that is something that they wouldn't want to talk about. So I think, you've been receiving positive feedback. I think that's great. You've got 11 case opportunities. That's you're doing the deep dive with your client relationships. Fantastic. Next thing, you said a weak area was your market message. And I sent you something I created very, very quickly on the fly, which was how you articulate this 12-4-2 concept in terms of a service message. And what I envisioned with something like that is that it would have a kind of a picture of your team. You would have your voice speaking to it. And if you came in contact with a prospect, you had the call, you could follow up and just have it reside in either Google Drive or Microsoft Cloud, where you could just send the link. They open up the link, and there goes your market message. So think about that as being a possibility. The first part is you've got to, you said you wanted to narrow your market message down. Look at the message on the on that PowerPoint I sent you. Work with it, shorten it up if you like, change it. But that's about as long as you kind of want to have your message. That one was maybe 3 minutes in length. So think about that. By way of market message, and it really starts with the value you provide your clients. And one of the ways to craft that message is to ask a few clients what is the value that you receive, that you proceed to receive from us? What is the value you get in our relationship? And just take some notes. It could be on the end of a phone call. And it could be something as simple as, now, Joe, after we've kind of finished up our conversation, I'd like to just ask you a question. What value do you perceive to receive from our relationship? And jot down the notes. Pretty soon you're going to get the theme for what the value, what your value message is going to be. Okay? So think about that in terms of your market message. Okay. The next thing we talked about, and you wanted to make that succinct, you wanted to make it clear. And that really, your market message really should be your value proposition. So we're using those words interchangeably. And the next thing that we talked about was, talked about financial planning and, how you gather, continuing to gather assets by doing that. And one of the frustrations was the email executive summary. So here's what I'd like you to think about. Pretty soon you're going to find that these executive summaries have some similar information and a little bit of uniqueness. So I would first put them in a Word document and basically create a template. And then when it's time to send out an executive summary, just go and copy and paste some of the verbiage from your template and shoot it in there, and anything that's unique, just add it to, so that you're not spending a lot of time recreating the same thing. So I would have a couple of go-to templates, and I would label them so that you can quickly reference them. Okay? So that first do them in Word, and then copy and paste them to your email. And do your executive summaries that way. What do you think about that suggestion?
I think it's fine.
Okay.
The only thing I kind of am concerned about is a lot of times the calls, instead of going 20 minutes, go 30 minutes, and I stack them like one behind the other, behind the other, behind the other. So I'm going to have to move some of those around so that it gives me just a little bit of, even if it's a 10-minute window in there to... I need some wiggle room, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
What ends up happening is I'll get in a call and I'll go, you stayed on here for 30 minutes. We're supposed to be on here for 20. It leaves me no time to do the copy and pay.
So then they stack up on you.
I don't think it's as, I'm looking for the right word. Maybe it's powerful because, and then you get it a day later or something, and it just doesn't, I don't know, I just
kind of
feel like I'm half-assed in that part of the program.
I don't feel like 24 hours to me is kind of, people may not even check their email same day.
But, you know, I mean, I'm comfortable working about 50 hours a week, 60 tops. I don't really want to go above that. And, and so part of what I've been doing, too, is it'll free it up some. Is I got about 12 of the plans that we have delegated out to the third party to do educational meetings. So let's keep talking to him later on today. Hopefully that'll fly. That won't be, I'm a little bit concerned about handing it over, but, I need to, because they're smaller accounts that I need to free up time. I'm just going to take over, I don't know, what, 5 or 6, and honestly,
you'll be perpetually doing that, by the way. You know, you'll be perpetually making decisions on who stays and who you keep.
And that's part of my challenge, I guess. I'm not very good about, I mean, I'll prune it, but I need to prune it some more. And I even went in, quite frankly, and took some of the, what I consider to be monthly calls, and I said, you know, it really isn't a monthly call household when I look at the revenue and stuff. And so some of those metrics have changed between, like, what are monthlies and what are quarterly. And I've got too many in quarterly households, you know. I've got too many of them. But it's a related party. I kind of look at it differently because it's the kids, it's the next generation. I mean, I'd be stupid to sort of send that out to another place or a call center or stuff. But I think I need to go in and take about 5 to 7 households and just swallow the bitter pill and send them out to somebody else at some point here in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, they should be supernova trained, I mean, so that the client continues to get the quality level of service. So there's a couple of ways to do this is, you even make the handoff, but they've got to, the FA that you assign has got to be committed to the same quality and level of service. That's the thing. That they've got to, you know, be up to speed on Supernova so that the clients don't proceed to have a different level of service. Because I'm not in favor that you onboard another team member and you dilute the practice by continuing to accommodate, you know, the smaller relationships. So if you onboard another team member, you still want to deliver, you know, that value that you provide so that the team, you know, doesn't have a, you don't decimate your brand, the quality of your brand. Okay? So those were all of the things that you all talked about. The one question I had for Bridget, did you all by any chance, I think I mentioned to you that there's a book out, Supernova Advisor Teams, The Pathway to Excellence.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things we talk about is functional leadership and how it shifts. So sometimes, you know, Kelly, you're clearly the leader, and it talks about leadership styles. And you really have a very strong servant leadership style, and so does Audra. And sometimes, in crisis, you know, you got to put on the autocratic hat. So kind of, you know, we got 24 hours to respond to this huge relationship. So we're on focus mode. And so we talk about leadership shifts. And so what this brings me to now is Bridget, you're a leader as well. And so in your leadership, you have to be that person who really is in control of the calendar and the schedule, so that you help Kelly and Audra manage their time. Almost being a little bit dictatorial about it, where, not to the point where you're going to anger somebody, but to the point where you're saying, hey, look, you're putting this back to back. I want you to know that if you do that, it's going to, cause you to miss out on this and that. So I just want to let you know, you think we can move that, create at least 15 or 20 minutes of space for you? And you have to step forward and you have to say that. Okay? So you have to be in control. And then, of course, Kelly and Audra have to allow you to do that. They have to say, okay, you got my blessing. Keep me under wraps. I mean, when you go to the dentist's office, he doesn't come out and, and pencil in the appointment. You know, his staff does that. You know, same with doctors. Okay? They control that calendar. You know, it's ironclad. Okay. So I just wanted to pass that along. You got my permission. You got to get Kelly and Audrey's permission. You know, with your permission, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to control your calendar, and I'm not going to let you get overwhelmed. I'm not going to let things seep in there that you can't, you know, follow up on. So I want you to understand that. Okay? All right. Okay. Now, we've gone through the primary things that we wanted to talk about. So I think, you know, again, we talked about these accountabilities and responsibilities. The key drivers for revenue growth. It seems as if you've adopted some new things, you've made some improvements. Now, are there any impediments that you can see to your success? Is anything holding you back that you want to share with me that you haven't shared?
Yeah, I'll touch on that, and I'll let the other people touch on it too. And I know we're coming up on the end of the hour, but I've had an issue for, I don't know, it's been probably about 3 years, where when we onboarded 4.5 years ago, we were under the impression that we could work whatever hours we wanted to work. And that's true for me. It's not true for either. There's a 20-hour cap, and I don't know what happens on hour 21. It happened one time, and let's just say it was awkward, to put it mildly. This was not explained to us, and not only was it not explained to us, it was explained to us by somebody who wasn't in management, like say the branch manager or something like that. And I kind of felt like that was a chicken shit way to deal with that situation, honestly. And I don't really like the fact that, you know, I'm not insisting on getting my way, but I want total disclosure. If somebody's going to deliver a bitter pill, I think it needs to be the people who are in charge. And that's not what happened here. And I have an issue with that because that puts a cap on Audrey's time. It either forces us into putting a cap that we didn't know existed on her time or having to fly on her timesheet. Literally. That's the way it's structured right now. And I don't think it was cool, on the part of the firm to bring us over under the assumption, not even assumption, every other firm that we worked at never put an hourly cap on her, except for RBC.
Okay.
And I don't understand not only the rule, but I don't understand why it was communicated by the people that it was communicated to. And when they did communicate it to me, they said, well, you were told this. I'm like, bullshit, I wasn't told this. I would have immediately raised an objection to it. So not only was it not communicated, I was told it was communicated when in fact it never was. And I guess I'm being a little too strong in my response, but it's just been something that I feel like has been mishandled by the
firm. Okay. Let's talk about that for a moment. Because what happens with some of these firms, and I'm talking HR and finance, they make decisions on fixed costs and headcount, okay? So, and what's happened is people have been fine-tuning this stuff so much to squeeze every dime of profitability out of it that the question I have is, if Audra needed to work 30 hours, is that what she wants to do? Does she want to work part-time? First of all, answer that question, and then I'm going to get into my response.
I'm going to let Audra answer that one for you.
Yeah, so what I want is I want the flexibility to be able to do what I need to do to manage and help grow our business. And so that means some weeks I'm working 5 hours a week, some weeks I'm working 40 hours a week, and it really just depends on what what the demands are. If they, if we don't,
you haven't been working 40, you know, anywhere close to that.
Well, I realize that, yeah. But it's just this 20-hour week thing is weird.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I
get it.
That all, and I think that's where we're getting the sticking point. Is we're like, well, you want us to grow our practice. Well, we want to grow our practice. But understand that you put this cap that we never knew existed until after we got over here. And then when you did finally communicate it to us, you had somebody that's not even the person who's in charge of the brand coming to us and saying, well, you were told about this. Never was. In writing, verbal, or otherwise.
Okay.
I told, and I just think it's pretty,
okay.
It's as best as a trust level in a relationship, honestly.
Well, I mean, there are two things, and maybe this is me being a bit of a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, we were told then, essentially, to just lie on the timesheet, if you needed to. And there's another issue where Catherine told you, she was just like, well, it's just, it doesn't matter how much you work, just don't put more than 20 hours on the timesheet.
I didn't realize that.
And then, you know, then I go through training every year on how to properly do a timesheet. And there it is very clear of you have to be honest. Then there's another instance where I don't get, I can't get access to the system.
That's a big deal, actually.
When I'm not in the office. I can't read my emails. I can't.
So you can't really work remotely?
I can work remotely only on our retirement plan.
But I'm saying that's for the system working remotely. So, okay. So what you have here, okay, I think I get it. There's a couple of things.
The other thing that I wanted to say, though, is that I was told, well, just work remotely, logging in as remotely.
And that's a violation of policy.
In both instances, they're huge violations of policy, and that really undermines any sort of credibility from my point of view. I don't know, maybe I'm being a stickler for the rules, but I think the rules are pretty black and white.
Yeah, I think, number one, don't violate the rules. That flies in the face of FINRA. So, you know, don't do that. Don't let somebody tell you that you can do some things. That's how, you know, down the road in the future, how you kind of get thrown under the bus. I don't necessarily recommend that. Okay?
Yeah.
But here's what I think happens. That there's an allocation for, and a job code, job description, for every role. Your role has a job description and a code, okay? Which means that dictates, from a HR standpoint, how you have to be treated. Now, if a employee exceeds the amount of hours versus that job code, the firm is obligated to make payment. And if they don't make payment, they violated their HR policy and therefore could have some liability. Absolutely. This has been running rampant through the industry. That's point one. Point two is there's typically now a headcount allocation, which means with your job code, you probably aren't coded as full-time headcount, which means the branch, the region, or whatever that has to adhere to headcount restrictions stay within their boundaries. Okay.
Yep.
Third item. Yeah. Absolutely. Third thing is that with the way that you are tracking, productivity per FA goes way up. Now, no more than about 5 years ago, RDC had an average headcount of about 500,000, which was well below the average of the top bull bracket firms. And
right.
They had the desire to try to improve that. Okay? So what I think you need to figure out, is there a job code that creates more flexibility for ADRA? And I bet you there is. One of the things they did at Merrill Lynch is we used the designation IA.
That's
there
right.
Was an,
IA.
Okay.
Hours a week. It wasn't
capped
at other firms,
right?
No, it wasn't capped at other firms, because we used the person could work 40 or 50 hours or whatever, but they became an investment associate.
And they're recruiting people over and they're not telling them.
Yeah.
And
right.
They go after their books and then they tell them that they told them and they never told them. I mean, it's really very cool.
So I think
you have to either. You have to lay it out in black and white. This is what we're doing. These are our productivity increases. These are the relationships we're onboarding. These are the niche markets that we're going after. Life has changed. We're becoming more productive. But this restriction relative to that job code needs to change. So we either change the restriction or change the job code in order to have more flexibility. And I think that has to be the basis of your argument.
Okay.
We need to have that not with Steve. We need to have it with
clearly.
The normal risk that person has had over there.
It is.
So I'm giving you kind of the management view. Looking at it from the top down, and then I'm trying to give you the bottoms up view.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I think right on. I think you're right on target. And that person's name is I'm trying to blank.
But I think you should take these bullets and I think you should lay it out. And you should have a, you should have a call on that.
Angela Balso, A-R-O-L, so that's actually who Bridget reports to, I believe, as well.
Because oftentimes what happens is that a directive comes down, but nobody ever provides any rationale for it, and it leads you to your own devices to try to figure out, well, what do they mean? Why do they mean this? What are they trying to do?
Yeah.
And so you've got to let them know that you guys are on fire and what your needs are here.
Yeah.
And I think you have probably one of the strongest arguments that I can think of. Okay. I think that pretty much sums up our time for today. I think there was a lot of value in our conversation. And as always, I am open for any email, any other comments that happen after our sessions that you'd like me to pay attention to, or some items that you'd like me to pay attention to for our next call. All right.
Why huddle as a group and just kind of put together a list of maybe topics or a topic that we might want to cover on the next call.
Okay.
The group's input on that. And I know we're at 12:08, so we're 12:06, so it doesn't matter, but we're a little over. I appreciate you taking the extra time first. It's been helpful.
Oh, fun. Having fun. Enjoying this very, very much. Look, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to chatting with you on the next call. Don't forget, go online, Supernova Advisor Teams, and get a copy of that book. I think you're going to get some valuable insight.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll get on it. Thanks.
All right, Jeff. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.